Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is author Ram Sundaram, who has just published his debut book, I Am Me, which, incidentally, is a very fine collection of short stories. Ram, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon. It's a pleasure being here.
Firstly, let me congratulate you. I read a lot of books. I really, really enjoyed I Am Me. So slap yourself on the back.
Thank you so much. That's very kind of you to say.
I find the art of interviewing is somewhat similar to that of being a trial attorney. You never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Well, you know, I've dug around the internet to try and find out something about Ram Sundaram, and I've come up short. I know that you have a degree in chemical engineering. You live in Calgary. But other than that, I know virtually nothing about you. Would you care to elaborate? Tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, sure. Well, first of all, I'm a very boring person, so there's not much to tell. Well, I was born in India. And from the age of 3, I used to live in the Middle East. We lived in Saudi Arabia for a while because my dad's an engineer, too. So we used to work in the oil and gas sector, so we used to move around a lot. And then we lived in Dubai for a few years before we came to Canada in 2000. And we lived in Guelph, Ontario. And then a year later, moved to Calgary, and this has been my home ever since and the longest I've ever been in a place. So I'm very attached to Calgary.
I rather like Calgary. It's a nice city in the summer, but it's not quite so much fun in the winter.
Absolutely, I agree. Especially since I like to spend a lot of time outdoors, the winter tends to be a bit of a drag.
Yeah, I mean, you're born in India, you lived in parts of the Middle East. I mean, That must have been a genuine culture shock, seeing snow.
The thing about the Middle East, though, is that it was we lived in a very we were surrounded by Indian families, so it almost felt like we were still in India. And the culture shock, I suppose, came when we moved to Canada. But even then, the culture in India tries to imitate North American culture so much that I was still kind of trained for the American culture. So when I came here, the lifestyle took a little bit of time to get used to. The schools, for example. I mean, the schools here are so free and relaxed. And, you know, in the Middle East and in India, you wear uniforms to school. And, you know, it's very disciplined and organized. So that kind of, it was a bit liberating coming here. But otherwise, there wasn't too much of a culture shock, I would say.
Didn't you also spend some time in England?
Yeah, that's right. At the end of 98, my dad went to Telford, England for some work, and we were there for a few months. And so that was my first taste of Western culture, really. And that's the furthest west I'd ever been in my life at that point. And I just had the time of my life. Those few months were really heaven, really.
So as a world traveler, shall we say, yeah, is there a favorite spot? Yeah.
Well, you know, like I'm so sentimental that I'm attached to Calgary, but other than Calgary, I would have to say England. Being in Telford at that time, it was a very special experience, and I always loved the English culture. It's one of my favorite places in the world. And I've been back there a couple of times when I was traveling to India, but haven't had a chance to go back and properly visit the place. So that's really high up on my to-visit list.
Now, I noticed that you have a degree in chemical engineering. Are you involved in the oil and gas business? Because that tends to be Calgary.
Surprisingly, no, even though I probably should be. The degree was just almost a backup, really. Just before, I always wanted to be a writer. I just kind of did the degree. I was interested in chemical engineering. I found chemistry very exciting when I was in high school. So it was just those 4 years were just about doing something different. And really, as far as future is concerned, I have no plans of going into the sector at all.
Yep, I've always considered knowledge to be power. It you know, and I don't mean that, you know, in the sense that I want to dominate the world. Yeah, more that knowledge is always useful. Chemical engineering may sound like something that doesn't have application in everyday life. But it certainly does. I mean, just the act of learning teaches you much.
Well, in a sense, it's so different from writing, from the sort of the creative world, that the contrast kind of helps you appreciate writing even more. You know, most of the times when I used to be in engineering class, I couldn't wait to get out of there. And a lot of times you kind of drift off in class and you're busy writing notes about what you're going to be writing about that night. Of course, it was definitely a great learning experience. But more than anything else, it really taught me the value of having an imagination, of thinking outside the box, so to speak. Because engineering is a very rigid environment. It's very structured. And that's great for some people, but I always I thrive in not having any boundaries to work with.
What actually got you started in writing?
Well, writing goes hand in hand with storytelling, as I'm sure you're aware. So from the time I was very young, I used to enjoy telling stories. And the first book I ever read was by Enid Blyton. A British author.
I know her well.
Yeah, and it was the Famous Five series, and I read that book.
That was going to be my next question. You know, was that the Famous Five or the Secret Seven?
I read both. The Secret Seven I read a few years later. I started with Famous Five. I know there's another one. I think it's called the Mystery Series. I can't remember what it's called. The Find Outers. I don't know if you remember that. That was another series, too.
No, I don't recall that one.
The Famous Five was the first... the first book I ever read was Five Go to Smuggler's Stop, and that's I read that at age 10. And it's such a wonderful experience reading your first book. I'm sure everyone out there is aware of that, too. It's it leaves a lasting impression on you. And for me, it just... More than enjoying the story, I was so enamored by the prospect of actually telling a story through writing. And, you know, having a book, it's so tangible as opposed to telling stories orally. I mean, when you have a book, you kind of think of it as being immortal, as lasting forever. And to have a story encased within this book that people can pick up and read at any time, I guess I was just always intoxicated by that idea.
Did you write... stories just for your own amusement?
Yes, actually, just after I finished reading Five Go to Smuggler's Stop, I wrote a 7-page story that I thought was original, but it was just a summary of Five Go to Smuggler's Stop in, 7 pages. And, it's because I wanted to keep trying that. And then over the next few years, I kept trying to write stories like that. You know, it kind of had the same theme about children... trying to figure out a mystery, something to that extent. And that's the beauty of it, of writing, really, is that it's more of a craft. Storytelling is more of a talent, I find, but writing is really a craft. So if you keep writing, and then eventually you come across a story that really works, then the two click, and you've got a book. That's the way I think it works.
Right, and believe it or not, that's a great segue into my next question.
There you go.
Obviously, Well, you should be incredibly pleased with I Am Me. It's a collection of 20 short stories that you have split into two sections. Do you want to explain the concept to our listeners?
Sure. The term that I use, I call it a two-way book. And essentially, you have two books encased into one. So you have the option of reading one book, one half of the book, and then flipping it over and reading the other side. But the two, it's almost a twin narrative, because the 10 short stories on one side, the same titles are on the other side as well, but the stories are completely different. So it almost offers the reader two perspectives on the same story. And, yeah, that's about it, I think, right, Simon?
I think you're selling yourself short. The titles remain the same. In some ways, the concepts remain the same, but they're just written from different viewpoints.
Mm-hmm. That's right, because when I started writing it, I wanted to write about the individual's perspective. So the 10 short stories were about the journey every individual goes through from the time we're born to the time we die and the afterlife. But then I realized the story was incomplete because I wasn't looking at the other side of it, which is the collective consciousness. So I almost took the same 10 stories and I wanted to give it more of a reality feel, if I can call it that, where it's the world goes through the exact same 10 concepts.
Okay, in the foreword to the book, you actually say that one side is written from reality while the other side is written from fantasy. I think you sell yourself short. Yeah, you certainly have two different perspectives on every story, but I think it would be overly simplistic to say it's reality versus fantasy.
I quite agree, actually. I cringe when I think about that foreword because it was a bit obligatory. The publishers asked me to put that in because they felt a two-way book is such a unique concept that, you know, a reader picking up the book might not really understand how they should approach reading the book. And I really wanted to stay away from giving any kind of direct message to the reader to say how they should read a book. I mean, reading a book is such a personal experience. I have no right dictating that for any reader. But they just felt I should almost give a summary of why the two-way book was structured the way it was and what each side represents. It almost seemed, like you said, simplistic to say reality and fantasy. But it seemed to almost get the message across better than what I actually intended.
I will do the honors here for our listeners. It's a very unique book. When I first received it, I went, "Oh, book," and I did my usual deal of, "Well, let's just thumb through it and see what's going on." I'm not talking about reading. I'm literally just thumb through it. And I found that, first half of the book, that looked okay. And then I turned the page and the words were upside down. And I went, "Oh, no, publishers have messed up again." But no, that's not the way this book works. All you've got to do is turn the book over and life is good. And so you have these 20 stories in total, you know, that meet in the middle. My advice to anyone that is going to read this book, and it's just my personal view, read a story from the front, if you can figure out which the front is. And I'll give you a clue. The front is the side that doesn't have the ISBN number on it.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing I was really upset about. I didn't want a barcode put on either cover because I wanted to keep it ambiguous, so a reader could pick it up and read either half first. But you know how publishing companies are. They have their own policies, and the barcode has to be on the back. So,
right. So my recommendation is start at the end that doesn't have the barcode. Read a story and flip it over and then read the other version of the story. And that's exactly what I did. And I just thought it was delightful. Where on earth did you come up with this idea from?
You know, the funny thing is, it was a complete accident, because I was planning to write a two-way book, but it was going to be a novel, and I was working on that when I started writing IME. And so I wanted to kind of publish a book beforehand and get some short stories out there, test the market, and really just get a book out as quickly as I could. So I wrote 10 short stories, and the first short story in the collection, Earth's Child, I had two versions of that, because I wasn't happy with the first one. I felt there was some more I could do with it. So I had two stories now, and I couldn't decide which one I wanted to use. And then so I sort of thought, well, hang on a minute, why can't I use both stories, because I'm attached to them both? And then I realized I could use the two-way concept in this book as well, and kind of, like I said, tell a story from another perspective, from an individual's perspective, the first 10, and then from a collective consciousness, the next 10. So I took every story I'd written and started writing a pair for it, a mate, if you will. And that's really how it came about.
It's just such a unique concept. Now, from a technical point of view, how much hassle did the publisher give you when you explained what you wanted to do? I'm sure they must have had a fit.
Well, yeah, they were a bit apprehensive about it, but the first editor's comments I got was they liked the concept. They were just really afraid people wouldn't understand it, and that people would be skeptical about picking up a book and seeing half the book upside down, you know. And so they said, figure out a way to write an introduction on either half, telling people, because the problem is most books have a back cover that tells you what the book's going to be about. But when you have two front covers, then the reader almost feels a bit, well, like, where do I go to find out about the book when I'm picking it up? Which is why they wanted me to put the author's note inside. So, yeah, the publishers, though, I must say, were very accommodating, much more than I thought they would be. And the only real issue we had was about the barcode on the back, because I wanted it on the inside jacket so that both sides would seem equal. But other than that, no, it was they were really nice about it.
Yeah, I can understand why they absolutely insisted on the barcode somewhere. Yeah. You know, otherwise, it would create havoc when people were trying to buy it in the store. You, whoa, where's the barcode?
One of the first reader feedback I got was an email from this gentleman saying, I just read the book and I really enjoyed it. And he said, it took me 2 weeks to read the book, but 3 weeks to figure out how to read the book. And I suppose that is the kind of issue people deal with, is do you read one half, then the other? Which half do you read first? But the idea, the suggestion that you gave to the readers to read one story at a time, both versions, that hadn't actually occurred to me when I wrote it. you know, I really did imagine people read one half, then the next. And if I had known people might read it like this, I don't know, I might have dressed up the stories a little differently, I think.
Oh, no, I think it's perfect the way it is.
Oh, no, I agree, too. I just meant because I was so obsessed with the structure of going from birth till the end, this is actually really good. I mean, I like the fact that people can read the story like this because then they get the full impression of every concept before they move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
I will caution readers. This is a book that you actually require two bookmarks for. Right? you read the story, you put bookmark number one in, flip the book over, read the other side, put the other bookmark in. You know, otherwise you'll be chasing your tail. In fact, there's a marketing idea for you. When people buy the book, you should include two bookmarks.
Two books? That's a really good idea. You should probably look into that.
I do lots of book reviews. And the key to the game is to talk about the plot, but not give too much away. You know, if you do that, you've written a spoiler, or as I like to call it, a grade 6 book review. the idea of talking about the plot and not giving too much away is pretty difficult when you're dealing with short stories. And there is one story in the book, oops, I should say two stories in the book that I just cannot resist asking you about. And that would have to be 50 Cent. So for some reason, it just resonates with me. The difference between taking and giving. You wrote the stories, so I'll let you explain. And that way, if you give the plot away, I can remain innocent.
Okay, I guess the onus is on me now, eh? Okay.
Right.
Well, let me just say that the whole concept of 50 Cent is about friendship, and more specifically, the price of friendship. And the story was inspired by someone I knew growing up in Saudi Arabia, in my school. And he was about 8 years old at the time. And he was the best storyteller in the class. And kids would actually pay him money for him to spend lunchtime with them to kind of tell them stories and entertain them for the half-hour lunch break. And I was one of his paying customers. And that whole concept kind of stayed with me, I suppose, because you know, the concept of friendship is that people hadn't done anything other than giving him 50 cents to spend time with him. And something even at that age, it seemed wrong to me. And I really wanted to examine that further. So that's what the premise of one of the stories is about. It's about paying literally for friendship. The other side, I wanted to look at a more, I guess, a metaphorical way of payment. And you still deal with the same value of money, 50 cents. But I wanted to look at two friends that take several lifetimes. They're friends in several lifetimes, and their circumstances change in every lifetime. But the things that remain constant is their friendship and the price of the friendship, which is the 50 cents. So it's kind of the progression of their friendship in several lifetimes and the progression of the 50 cents in several lifetimes. And I don't know if the story works or not, but it was just so much fun writing it. And
oh,
it was
the story works beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
But I still view it as giving on one side, and the other version is taking.
Mm-hmm. That's for the I really like that too. The main theme I would say is that friendship costs the two people in it something. And the cost isn't always money, of course, but it has to cost you something to be in that relationship, which is what I wanted to look at, is that there's a bit of sacrifice, there's a bit of compromise. You invest something into the friendship, and then, like you said, you get something out of it. So definitely the one side, it's more, you're more directly investing something, and the other story, you're getting something out of it.
Obviously, this story, you just admitted the fact, you know, it is rooted in something that happened to you growing up. Is that true of the other stories? Do the stories have roots in your experience?
Some of the stories have roots in my experience. Some are borrowed from people I know. The key was, on the one side, the factual occurrences. I had to fictionalize them, the stories. And on the other side, some of the stories were fictional, but I had to factualize them in a sense. I had to add a bit of my own experience in there in order to give it more substance. So all the 20 short stories, in some way or another, are rooted in fact. And at the same time, they're all completely embellished, complete exaggerations, and completely fictional. So there's a blend of everything in there.
Okay, we have to go to the shameless commercial. Where can people buy copies of I Am Me?
Well, there's Amazon, and there's online on Indigo and Chapters, of course. And all the major online retailers, I think Barnes & Noble, etc.
Do you have a website?
IMEshortstories.com. It's all lowercase. And I'm also doing a book signing in Calgary, Alberta, at Chapter Shaughnessy on April 28th from 1 to 4 p.m. So if anyone's in town, please feel free to come by and say hi to me.
I know it's early days, but what sort of reader feedback are you getting?
So far, I've been really blessed. It's all been positive. And people have been they've been very affected by the two-way narrative. And there's a philosophical tone to the book, and people really seem to have taken kindly to that. I mean, I was afraid when you write something that is philosophical, you're afraid about how people will respond to it. But so far, it's been very positive, like I said. And people said it kind of reminds them of, and this is really high praise for me, but they said it reminds them of Life of Pi in a way, by Jan Martel, who's one of my favorite writers. So that was really, really high praise for me.
Well, that's interesting. Do you feel that your writing is influenced by people that you have read?
You mean based on the feedback I've been receiving, or?
No, just life in general.
Well, I really like the way he approaches his stories, because he leaves so much of the interpretation up to the reader. You know, that's one thing I really appreciate about his writing, that's what it is. So that's what I was really trying to do with this story, with this book, and with any other book I try to write, is to leave it as ambiguous as possible. Because he even said in an interview, he said, writer intent is quickly overtaken by reader intent. And I found that such a great idea to think about, because when I write a book, I've written a book and it's out there, and as soon as the reader picks it up, whatever I had in planned for the book goes out the window, because it's all in the interpretation. So that's probably the most I've been influenced by his writing, is that he really wanted to leave things as ambiguous as possible and say to the reader, just make your own interpretations out of it.
Okay, and obviously that leads into my next question. Where do you go from here? Do you have a project that you're working on?
I have a follow-up book. I cringe about calling it a sequel because it's completely different. The two are not related. But it is another two-way book. And it's going to be a novel this time, not short stories. And it really looks at lying And friendship. It's friendship and how lying can mold and transform any kind of relationship. And the book's going to be called I Lie. And like I said, it's going to be a two-way book again. And it'll be interesting to take all the concepts I've done with the short stories and the two-way structure and apply it to a novel. And I actually started writing the novel before I wrote I Am Me. But now to go back and retouch everything and use everything I've learned from this experience should be really interesting. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Do you have a guesstimate on when this might be finished?
I'm very optimistic that I should have it released before Christmas of this year. When I might have it finished, I'm hoping within the next couple of months, really. If I can get it done by summer, then great. Because then, of course, there's the whole process of getting it to the publisher again and going through the rigorous editing and everything else that comes afterwards. But that's the timeline I've set up for myself. I really want to get this book out before Christmas of this year.
Well, I'm looking at my my watch. Our time is just about up. I do want to thank you for taking time out today to talk to me.
It was my pleasure, Simon.
Oh, and I'm sure I speak for all of us at Blogger News Network and all of our listeners in wishing you every success with I Am Me, and I personally am looking forward to your next book. So keep me in your email list.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much, Simon.
Ram, it's been delightful, and I'm sure we'll keep in touch. And till next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Simon. Thank you.